Hey, rockers. Today's guest is my old pal, Brendan Kelly, bassist and lead vocalist for the Chicago, Illinois punk rock band, The Lawrence Arms. Brendan and I break down the YMCA down the street from the clinic, taken from their 2014 Epitaph Records album, Metropole. We talk about the good old days when we first met back in the 90s, when he was the frontman for Chicago ska punk legend Slapstick, and how that band has spawned a number of other notable bands due to the immense talent that each of those band members possess. He takes me line by line through the song in a way no other guest has on the show so far. Just when I think I can't be any more intrigued by an artist's inspiration for a particular song, Brendan comes along and shatters that notion. What does the YMCA, a methadone clinic, Banksy, the Titanic, Vertigo, Flo Rida, and a mouthful of rotten teeth all have in common? Well, you're just gonna have to stick around to find out. For all this and a whole bunch of other laughs, don't touch that dial.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
Brendan.
Hi.
Hi. We were just talking off audio here that we've known each other for almost 30 years. And that sounds ridiculous to say.
Yeah, but like, you know, the other day I was at my kid's baseball game and this dad looks at me and goes, yeah, you're like my age. You're at 50, right? I was like, what?
You want to get punched in the face?
I guess I'm 44. It's not like I'm like way off of being 50. It's just like, it was just a little unnerving. I it's my first mistaken for half a century years old. So,
no, it's great. Yeah. I want to give the listeners just a little bit of history here. So, I've known Brendan since 1994. I talked about this on the episode with Dan Andriano. We had Dan on a couple months ago, and you know, I was in Gainesville, Florida, and I got this cassette tape, this demo of this band called Slapstick. And I was just like, man, they're like less than Jake, but they're more punk. I like this better. I loved you guys. I thought it was awesome. And I'm like, who the hell are these guys? And you know, back then you hope for a phone number and a cassette or a yep. snail mail address. And somehow we got a hold of each other and we ended up doing shows. And you know, it's so funny, you know, Less Than Jake continued all these years. I'm still doing it. I can't imagine, though, and I've heard you talk about this in interviews, it's a little weird and strange for you guys to talk about that time, because that was what you guys kind of think is like, oh, that's when we were kids. That was just our first band. But the impact that you guys had on the ska punk scene, I mean, you guys were as good or better than any of the bands that were doing it. And the talent that came out of that band, as I said in Dan's episode, Pete Anna on trombone ended up playing with Less Than Jake. You had, yep. Of course, Dan Andriano went on to Alkaline Trio. You have been, you know, in a ton of different projects. You went to the Broadways, of course, Lawrence Arms, which we're going to be talking about Lawrence Arms songs today. The Falcon, Brendan Kelly and the Wandering Birds. You've done solo stuff. Of course, in the Broadways, you also had Dan Hanaway, who played in Slapstick. So, just a wealth of talent that came out of that band. And, you know, I'm super stoked that you're still out there doing it.
Well, man, first of all, thanks for having me and thanks for the kind words. That's really nice. And, gosh, the podcast must've really fallen off if you're to me now from Dan. I mean, Dan's famous, but
no, you know, and I got to stop you there. I had you on for a number of reasons, but one, you're one of the funniest sons of bitches I've ever met in general. If you haven't checked out Brendan's Twitter feed, I believe it's Nihilist Arby's is your handle.
Nihilist Arby's is one of them. And then Bad Sandwich.
And
is
of course,
my personal
Bad
one.
Sandwich Chronicles and unreal, banter and wit coming from you, but
I think what's so funny though, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but like you just listed through like all the amazing talent and Slapstick, and I agree, it was really lightning in a bottle. I mean, like, I think that like everybody in that band, with the exception of me, was a real virtuoso, and I'm just like a song and dance man, and I'm fine with that. Like, and that's what I brought to the table, and that's what they needed for that band, you know. But like, the two people you left out were Robbie and Matt, who are the two most talented guys in that band by far.
And I should give a shout out, and I did in Dan's episode, you're right, to Robbie, who's just an amazing drummer, and Matt Stamps, amazing guitar player, who, you know, both went on to play music again. You know, Matt played in Tuesday with Dan, mm-hmm. Danny, and so... Yeah, not to leave them out at all, but you know, something I want to say to you, I've never said this, and we've ran into each other I don't know how many times over the years, and every time I see Brendan, we just pick up right where we left off. It's always a barrel of laughs, but it's funny, we as musicians, artists, whatever, sometimes we kind of diminish how good we actually are, and I haven't met too many guys in this business that have true rock star egos that are like completely off the mark. You know, most of us are pretty humble. You know, you're kind of like I am. You're very self-deprecating at times and whatnot, and that's refreshing. But at the same time, you know, I never saw a frontman, especially back in the days of Slapstick. You were just this wire. If you turned sideways, you couldn't see Brendan. He was just this wiry, skinny kid, and just this snotty. Just you commanded a stage, and you know, the listeners have heard me talk about Craig Aronson, who signed less than Jake DeCapital and Warner Brothers, and it was late 90s, maybe around 2000, and Craig had said to me, you know this guy Brendan Kelly? I said, of course. You know, I gave him the rundown Slapstick, and Craig looked at me and said, that kid's a star, you know, and I knew what he meant. I really did, man. You have that quality. I know that's hard to hear, bro to bro, but man, you have that thing, man. You're charismatic as hell, and you got something. And a lot of our listeners here have asked about you. That's why you're sitting in the hot seat right now. So
I can only thank you for the kind words. Thank Craig, RIP, and
yeah, man.
You know, and thank your listeners for hyping me to you, so I can be here, because it's a real pleasure, man. And I appreciate it. I appreciate all that stuff, man. That's really nice to hear.
Yeah, no, we did this thing in our Facebook group of asking what artists we want to be on there, and your name just kept popping up, and I just knew it would be a good chat. And you know, the Lawrence Arms, to give a little more history here, you guys have released 7 full-length albums from 1999 to 2020. The first record you did was A Guided Tour of Chicago in 99, and your most recent record is 2020's Skeleton Coast. You guys have been on labels from Asian Man to Fat Wreck to Epitaph, and there's also a little more history here. So, of course, Neil Hennessy plays drums in Lawrence Arms, as well as Chris McCowan, and Chris played with you in the Broadways.
That's correct, yeah, and Neil plays with me in the Falcon.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's I am like really like mate for life type, you know, like my best friends are all my friends from when we were kids. You know what I mean? And it's like, when I get into a project with somebody, like I've always said, Neil is like my musical life partner. He's always said to me, he's like, whatever you do, I will do. And I've always said, you're the best drummer in the fucking world. Of course. Yeah. You're always welcome to be a part of anything I do, because you're literally the best at that instrument of anyone I've ever seen. And I love you, you know?
Well, and that's why I'm giving all this history, and it's getting very incestuous right now. Everyone's played with everybody. This is really crazy though. And that's testament. A lot of this is just to how tight knit that Chicago scene is, and how much talent is bred there. And Neil, of course, the song we're going to talk about today, the YMCA down the street from the clinic, is taken from your 6th full length Metropole, which was produced by Matt Allison in 2008. Yep. Less Than Jake recorded at Atlas Studios in Chicago for our GNV FLA record with Matt Allison, and Neil was the second engineer on that project. So Neil is, like Brendan said, an amazing drummer. The guy's off the hook. The wealth of talent just surrounding all of you guys, and the fact that, you know, most of the people that I mentioned today are still out there doing it in some capacity or another is just testament to how great you guys are.
That's nice. But the thing is, we are not the scene. We are like we are just like one group of friends. You know, all the Slapstick guys, the Alkaline Trio guys, and the Rise Against guys, we are one very insular group of friends. Like, there's a very like vast and righteous scene out there that was out there then, and then, you know, out there now, and it really had almost nothing to do with us, but we just happened to kind of come in and take over like Vikings or something like that.
Yeah.
But
one of my favorite places, one of the first places to ever embrace my band out of Florida was Chicago. Just the scene there is always been killer. You can't even try to describe it to somebody. Like, what was it like back in the day? Where would you even begin to describe Chicago in the 90s? It was absolutely incredible. It was just a breathing machine of just fun and talent and everything else in between. This track, the YMCA down the street from the clinic, we're going to jump in here. You remember where you were at when you wrote it? I've read some stuff online that you were in Italy when you wrote this track.
Well, no, I wasn't in Italy when I wrote this song. I was in Italy when the record was over and I was trying to figure out what we should call the record. And I was staying at a hotel called the Metropole. And I kind of looked up and I was like, that's a dope name. And it's like the whole record has this like, sort of like anonymous city, international, but could be very local, could be very specific, but it's still very general vibe to it. Like the whole idea behind the record, I'm sorry to digress, I know this is not exactly what you're asking, but the whole idea behind the Metropole album is that like there's nothing lonelier than being in a city, right? Like if you could be isolated in like a sort of like parochial Vermont farm or whatever, but that's like sort of like, hey man, you know, I'm out here kicking it. But if you're alone in a city, you're very alone because there's people everywhere, mm-hmm. and they're just not for you, or you're not for them.
Yeah,
you know. Totally. And so it's sort of the vibe that the entire record sort of like works with. This song really, I think, sums up that notion. It's a song about isolation and loneliness. I mean, the whole record is about that.
Yeah.
But I don't remember where I actually was when I wrote this song, but I'm almost positive I was at my house.
And do you keep like journals that you write in and you use them, you pick them later for songs, or do you sit down and say, you know, I got this title in my head and I'm going to write the song and then you just put pen to paper?
Well, no. So what I do is when I'm writing, I try to write every day a lot. I usually use journals. Sometimes lately I've been using a computer because I lost my fucking journal and it's driving me crazy. And I'm like, I can't do this on a fucking computer. This is not how I've done it for, you know, I'm an old man, goddammit. I'm almost 50.
You can't teach Brennan Kelly new tricks.
No, that's absolutely true.
Not the way it works.
But so what I do is I wake up, usually if I'm like writing for a record, I'll know what the project is. And I will wake up and I'll be like, all right, I'm writing a Lawrence Arms record. I'm writing a Falcon record. I'm writing a Wandering Birds record. I wake up before I even brush my teeth, one page of lyrics, handwritten in a notebook, right? Go brush my teeth. I'll come back, another page of lyrics. And I'll do that probably over the course of the day. It becomes a little obsessive, like 10 times. And I'll have 10 pages by the end of the first day. And then at any point, I might pick up a guitar and try to play through all of them. But I have a notion. You know, I was listening to this interview, and I think I remember it as being Billy Joe from Green Day, but I don't know who it actually was. And it was like, somebody was like, well, what about this song? Like, let's say it was When I Come Around. I don't know, I don't remember what the specifics were. And he's like, oh, you know what? That song just came out right away. Like, it was like, as soon as I started playing the guitar, I had the whole song written, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that's the same thing that everybody says about their best songs. So fuck this. That's all I'm gonna do. I'm just gonna write so much that I get an album full of those songs.
Yeah,
that came out right away.
That's a running theme on this podcast, man. Some of the biggest songs were written in 5 minutes. You're like, what? You know?
Yeah, but it's like I haven't spent more than 5 minutes on a song in 20 years. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Like it just like at a certain point, I was like, if those are the best songs, why would I work harder for something that's worse? It's just like, throw it away. You know, it's like when people are like, finish your plate. And somebody said to me one time, it's like, never tell your kid to finish their plate. That's like just telling them to throw away the food in their body instead of in the garbage.
You're a garbage disposal.
Yeah. So it's like, if you got a song and you're like, oh God, how do I make this work? It's like, nope, crumple, crumple, next song, just start writing again. And anything that's in there that was good will be in your residual memory if you're worth a shit at all, and it'll come back.
Yeah, you know? So, I wish I had that tenacity. There's days that I don't want to write, and I try to force myself. You know, there's days I don't want to pick up the guitar that day, and that's okay. But I wish I had a little bit more drive in that department, because you know, I know that people that you don't really realize it, but you're working on your craft every day. Every time you write down something or type into the computer that you have to do now. But what I love about this song, and I want to jump into it, I love, and I've always loved your lyrics. And when I was researching this song, I looked at live performances, you acoustic, the full band live, of course, the album track. And I started reading comments on YouTube and some other places. And this song in particular, a lot of your songs do, but this one hits people hard, man. Like, they just relate to this one. And there's the poetry and the imagery that goes on in this tune. There's a lot of stuff here, and I'm really, really excited to jump into it. There's a 10-second intro. It's a pretty simple. Neil's just doing this kind of hi-hat thing. Just a really killer, rich bass tone that you got. And there's this cool little guitar lead that's brought back later in the song, kind of as a running theme. And then the band jumps in, and there's just this guitar chord that rings out.
Click on the link. For the world's biggest dick, you can smell the rats dying as the ship starts to sink down beneath the port. Her embraces and tears up against the bars, staring down their ears. You told me to kiss you.
I'm gonna jump in the lyrics here, and I'll do the first verse, and I'm gonna have you break it down us.
I you know what? I'm so excited to hear you read this opening line. Really.
Well, you know what else is funny is that you don't know how many times, and it's weird now that I think about it. Now I'm in my head about it. How many times the guests have been like, "It's so weird to hear my lyrics read back to me." You know, so bear with me.
Oh, but, no. Yeah, I just think specifically this particular opening line is really funny.
verse 3 has a line too, if you remember. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really funny to read. All right, here we go. Click on the link. For the world's biggest dick. you can smell the rats are dying as the ship starts to sink. Down beneath, the poor are in bracers and tears. Up against the bar, staring down their years. You told me to kiss you because we were at the end. And I said I wouldn't miss you because, baby, I'd be dead. And that's the only way it seems that I could get away. Otherwise, I'm nothing without you, babe. And then you give out this little, oh. And before you break it down, I have just one little note here I want to talk about. I really love whatever, and I'm assuming Matt Allison mixed the record.
Mm-hmm.
Did he mix it? Okay. There's a really cool vocal treatment. It's like this slap delay that just is really cool. And there's also a twang in your voice in this song, almost like a little bit of a drawl. And when I wrote that down, I started thinking of this tunic. The song kind of reminds me like it'd be in a bar scene of a spaghetti Western.
That's an awesome compliment.
Yeah, right? There's something about this tune that just kind of gives me that feeling. But yet, it's still, I wrote in the notes, it's still undeniably Chicago, man. I could just smell and feel the Chicago. So set up this first verse for us. What's going on here?
Thematically, in a macro sense, first of all, I mean, like, this is just me essentially talking, like, the way I sing this song. It's like my voice right now is like almost exactly the same. Click on the link, you know, it's like exactly.
Kind of, but you got a swagger in this one, man. Like I said, it's got that a little bit of, I don't want to say Southern draw. It's got something going on here.
Yeah, but so anyway, the idea is like sort of careening towards oblivion a little bit, right? So click on the link for the world's biggest dick is sort of, obviously, we've all gotten these emails about like either enlarging your penis or seeing large penises or whatever, you know, penis. Here's like some like, you know, Russian bot farm trying to get you to click on something. And so it's just sort of a metaphor for disaster, right? At first.
That's hilarious because I took that first line as click on the link for you're the world's biggest dick. Click on the link for me. Here I am. And now I get it. That's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's much stupider than that.
Yeah, that's great.
And then you could smell their. This is okay. This is a dirty little secret, Chris. I don't really like to talk about this very much, but the rest of this verse is pretty much about the movie Titanic. Because that is the metaphor for man's hubris getting the best of them.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, I wanted to start it out with like internet culture at large. You can smell the rats dying as the ship starts to sink. Down beneath, the poor are embraces and tears. And you misread it. It's up against the bars. Remember, they lock the people in the lower levels down beneath in order so they don't get to the lifeboats before the rich people.
So those kinds of bars.
The bars.
Yeah.
Staring down their years, right? Like looking like their life flashes.
Yeah, that's cool.
Right? You know? And it's like, and that was the first thing. It's like, you saw the rats like trying to run overboard. And that was when they were like,
yeah,
yo. I mean, I don't know. This is more from history books than from the fucking movie. So I apologize if I'm not like nailing James Cameron's vision of it, but I seem to recall that his movie was really good. But, and then you told me to kiss you because we were at the end is obviously like, that is from the movie type.
Yeah.
like, and then, I said I wouldn't miss you because baby I'd be dead is like my own like nihilist quality. That like me coming into the movie all of a sudden and being like, nah, bitch, I'm just gonna die. It's fine. because that's the only way this won't break my heart. You know, like if you don't live, if I fucking survive and I don't never see you again, like I have to be dead because I'm nothing without you.
Man, you're kind of blowing me away right now because I would have never taken that away from this. Number one, number two.
Well, that means it's terrible.
No, it actually doesn't. For me, what I love about this and what I love doing about doing this podcast, and I'm over a year into this now, Brennan, I have learned so much, and not from an envious or jealous point, but I admire someone that can write from that, like how you put those two worlds together and you wrote something as cool as this, man. It's awesome. It's really inspiring to me. I love songwriting, and just to hear that you were able to, you know, go from this internet thing to click on the link to, yeah, but it's kind of about Titanic, but then I put my own nihilist spin on it and how that all came together is really cool.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. I mean, I am really proud of this song. It's funny because I didn't want to put it on the record, and we were with my photographer to the stars, Ben Peer, and he was staying at my house, and I was playing him the record, and then like there was another song slotted into this space. Then I played him this one. I go, this one's not gonna go on the record, but I really liked it. And he goes, that's not going on the record. Fuck you. This should be the whole record. Just play this song fucking 14 times. That should be the record.
Well, and I'm glad you said something because it reminded me. So did you know when this song was like finished and you did it and even like, you know, your buddy telling you like this song should be on the record. Did you think there was something special here? And did you know that it was going to resonate and become such a fan favorite? This is one of your most popular songs. And the reason I asked that, this song was buried track 9 on the record. Typically, you don't put the hit that late in, on the track listing.
Well, first of all, Chris, I know that you know what I'm talking about when I say I don't believe that Spotify numbers are even remotely accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I'm sure that those songs have the right number of plays,
yeah,
but there's other songs that have more plays that are like not displayed up in like your top 5 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like I know what happens when we play certain songs live, and it's like, it's a lot more than when we play our top 5 songs.
Sure.
On Spotify live, you know? And so, so I think there's a bit of some shoe shine sales going on there with that, whatever.
Well, and I'm also basing this off not just those numbers or YouTube plays, but I'm basing it off of when I go and I do check out a number of live videos. And because a lot of times I notice the artist will do the song live in a different key or something. And I always like to pick up on that and ask. And I'm just going by audience reaction when you guys play.
Yeah, this one, okay. So
it's amazing.
Yeah. That being said, this one is, I would say it's like a real phenomenon within our work in terms of like, it's the Lawrence Arms of the Lawrence Arms. Like, there's no reason that it should have worked out, and it became incredibly popular.
That makes it exact sense. And something I want to talk about before we go any further, there's three verses in this song. All three verses all start out with just a guitar chord. And then on the third line, the guitar chord happens again, but there's this cool arpeggio part.
Miss you, cause baby, I'd be dead. And that's the only way it seems that I could get away.
That guitar chord with the arpeggio that happens all three verses. I like the consistency in that. I think it's cool. It's very sparse. The guitars aren't getting in the way of of the story here. And again, that's why I think it works so well. I noticed that there's only one harmony in this verse, and it's more of a like an octave thing. It's not so much a harmony. Just on staring down their years. Do you remember if Matt Allison pushed you to do that? And the guys in the band did that. And is that you backing yourself up, or is that Neil or Chris?
That's Chris. And it's funny because I always want Chris to sing pretty much every word with me. You know, that's what I love the most, is like singing in sort of unison or harmony, whatever it is.
There's a little bit of both going on. He's like unison at points, but there is little harmonies. It's cool.
You know, he's been pulling away from doing that. And in this song particularly, this is one of a couple of songs on the Metropole album where we kind of do employ that like spaghetti Western kind of feel.
Yeah.
To this. And that was like kind of conscious, but it kind of also just happened organically. And what was interesting was, because Chris has got like the prettier voice and I've got like the, I don't know, disgusting voice or whatever.
raspier voice.
Yeah, we've always, whenever we've done like sort of duet covers or something like that, it's like I've always sung the low parts and he's sung the high parts. And then we realized, I don't know, Chris's voice is the low one and I'm the one who hits the super high notes.
Yeah.
You know, and it took us this long. It took us 20 years into the band to figure that out. And so when he was like, when he was doing that, that line specifically goes, dude, I'm going to go for this. And I think I'm going to go below you. And I was like, oh yeah, that makes fucking perfect sense. I mean, like I'm too stupid to like come up with anything on my own. But like, as soon as he said it, I was like, oh, right. Yes.
No, I love it. And I want to backtrack and say that there is one more line. The last line is, otherwise I'm nothing without you, babe. Chris is singing there with you.
I could get away, otherwise I'm nothing without you, babe. Oh.
And then you do this kind of, oh. And was that oh thing always there? Or was that just something you were scatting, we call it in the studio, and it just happened? But it happens other places in the song. And I love it because it makes it feel like you're just talking, Matt. Like you said, you're almost talking the song. Like it's a matter of like, oh.
So that is sort of a thing of mine, like on multiple records for a lot, like since... I would say Greatest Story Ever Told, O Calcutta, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, and then Metropole and Skeleton Coast. That's like sort of like a signature thing that I do.
But then this song, it really works because it just lends something to this vocal and to this lyric. I don't know. It feels like your storytelling is like, oh, yeah, and I'm going to go on to the next thing I'm talking about. It's cool. We're already at this point at the 47-second mark, and we haven't hit a chorus. A lot of songs, you'll already hit a chorus at this point in the song. There's a musical break for 10 seconds, and then the full band is in following the same verse progression, and it has that same guitar. The third line has the guitar arpeggio thing. I'm going to read these lyrics out, and then I'm going to have you break these down. I got a bad sick stink, and I'm bathing in the sink at the YMCA down the street from the clinic. And there's a sad old man with a sad, saggy ass just crying under the electric dryer for your hands. And he's wet and he's dying and the spiders on his nose seem to indicate that he's been keeping warm out in the cold. And he's a lot like me, I guess, but we're somehow not the same. They say you really die the last time anybody says your name. Oh. And a couple things before you break this one down. The second line at the YMCA down the street from the clinic, that's the title of the song. And I'm going to ask you why in a second. There's harmonies on that line. There's harmonies on electric dryer for your hands. And he's a lot like me, I guess. And they say you really die the last time anybody says your name. So the song's building here. There's some more second vocals that are coming in there.
I got a bad sick stink, and I'm bathing in the sink at the YMCA down the street from the clinic. And there's a sad old man, just sad, saggy ass, just crying under the electric dryer for your hands. And he's wet and he's dying, and the spiders on his nose seem to indicate that he's been keeping warm out in the cold. And he's a lot like me, I guess. We're somehow not the same. They say you really died the last time anybody says your name.
Why that one line? Was that always the title of the song, or you named the song that after you wrote it?
I named the song after I wrote it, and cool. When that line came out, you know, of me, I guess, I think the thought was, oh, people will pay attention to the song if that's the name of it. You know, I mean, like, it's that or click on the link for the world's biggest dick, you know? But I mean, like, what's...
That's what it was called in like, Japan.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. It's like...
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
You know, it's like I just saw like some fucking comedian say this. It's like they say don't judge a book by its cover, which is fucking stupid, because that's why books have covers. That's exactly what you're supposed to do.
And I'm guilty of what you said. I've done that before. I've been like, well, that's the one of the cooler lines in the song. I'm going to pick that to be the song title.
Okay. But that's not being guilty of anything. That's being smart. It's like, yeah. You know, Chris number two from Anti-Flag said this to me one time. He goes, if you are spending $30,000 on a video, why wouldn't you make it the best song on the record? Like, what are you fucking stupid? like you think you're going to build into it like Guns N' Roses does? Like, those days are gone, man.
Yeah. You got to go for the jugular. Yeah. What else is going on here? What's up with the sad old man with the sad, saggy ass? He's crying under the electric dryer for your hands.
I used to work out at the YMCA. And I used to work down the street from this clinic, like a methadone clinic, you know, and I sort of conflated the two ideas because, like, both places were full of very sad people.
In very different ways.
I don't think so. I think a lot of those dudes that lived in that YMCA also went to that clinic, you know, and... the idea of going in, you know, and it's like, that's a funny trope. And like, I think that's something that like I was fucking with in this entire song is there's a lot of humor in this, but even though it sounds so dire and serious, the opening line is click on the link for the world's biggest dick, you know, like there's like a joviality that's like sort of baked into this that it's sort of like the songwriting exercise is, you know, man, if I can make this fucking sound serious as I'm talking about like a man's old saggy ass and like world's biggest dicks and stuff like that, and you know, whatever, then I've succeeded in, you know, that would be the exception to prove the rule.
And the imagery here on this line in particular, and this is what I took away from it, and he's wet, talking about the old man, and he's wet and he's dying and the spiders on his nose. You know, a lot of older folks will get those and alcoholics will get those like red little veins in their nose. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So this is this is about the alcoholic like spider veins in your nose.
Yeah.
And that's what seems to indicate that he's been keeping warm out in the cold. Yeah. You know, that's like sort of like the whole like Saint Bernard like kind of thing.
The bottle of whiskey's his electric blanket.
Yeah, and so that's why I get to. He's a lot like me, I guess, because you know it's like I'm at the YMCA. I'm watching this. You know, there's the funny joke about like old dudes just hanging brain all day long in the fucking gym locker room, you know, just like drying their balls off in the fucking hand dryer.
You know, I gotta stop you there. You're killing me because, you know, a lot of folks have written in our Facebook group and the listeners are like, you know, Chris seems like he really likes all these songs. He can't possibly like every song. You know, I really like this song, but I like it even more now. And that's happened with so many tracks that I have had in the show because I'm really learning about it. And like, it's so, I really thought this song was more serious. And I think it hits people. And knowing you, you're goofball. Like I've known you forever. But there is an undertone here of that seriousness in your voice, the way the song is delivered, and it hits people. And now hearing about some of these lines and hearing you explain them, it's hilarious. But real quick before we move on, do you remember if Matt or any of the guys in the band, like, was this song pretty much arrangement wise how you had it laid out, or was there any changes going on up to this point? Or
no, this is how me and Chris and Neil, like, we arrange songs as a trio.
Okay.
You know,
great.
And it always has been like that. And it's very much like being like on a movie set. And it's like, well, you're the gaffer, so I trust you with the lights. You're the best boy, I trust you with the electricity.
Yeah, that's...
You know, I'm the cinematographer, so you're going to trust me with that. And it's like, you know, you just have to kind of like let people play their roles. That's the way the Lawrence Arms works.
Awesome. Well, it comes back here now. Is the intro of the song comes back in with that haunting like guitar lead, and
you missed the whole thing though, the Banksy quote at the end.
Ah, that they say you really die the last time anybody says your name. That part.
Yeah, that's Banksy.
Okay. Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. They say he said, you die once when you die. And the second time you die for real is the last time anybody says your name. And I was like, that's just so fucking haunting. And I mean, this whole thing, you know, you said it's like, it's really funny and hilarious, but it's like the whole thing is supposed to be haunting also.
No, it is. And I even use that with here for the intro, the song comes back in with that haunting, I wrote haunting guitar lead. Cause it's, there's something about that lead. And then the band builds up and there's this just heavy kick drum that Neil's hitting and with some cool drum fills. And now you're into what I'm calling the first chorus. It's a minute and 47 seconds into the song. These exact lyrics happen again later. It's the only lyrics that happen twice in the song. That's why I'm calling it the chorus. This sweet and sticky dream was nothing that I needed. Just demons to believe. Poisons lined up to feed them. And the rings inside this tree are rotten deeper down. God damn this fucking town. It's restless and I'm drowning.
This sweet and sticky dream was nothing that I needed. Just demons to believe. Poisons lined up to feed them. And the rings inside this tree are rotten deeper down. Goddamn this fucking town. It's restless and I'm drowning.
Are you speaking of Chicago there or just in general?
Well, it's a universal take that I am personally applying to Chicago.
Yeah.
Basically. You know, sweet and sticky dream is nothing that I needed. I mean, that's liquor, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and just like the sort of like fugue state that you go through is like some sort of drunk. Demons to believe, that's your friends or your own demons in your head. And the poisons lined up to feed them is, you know, this is just like a expansion on that first line theme. But the rings inside this tree are rotten deeper down. That is a Vertigo reference. When you remember in Vertigo, and they're looking at the gigantic redwood that's cut sideways, and she's like, here I was born and here I died, you know, and it was all the rings of the tree in there.
Somewhere in here I was born, and there I died. It was only a moment for you. You took no notice.
So, and then, you know, and they had like, kind of like little sticky notes on the tree. And it was like, you know, the fall of the Roman Empire and shit like that. That was like, and it was just like to give this like expansive, crazy, a really concise view of your tiny minuscule place in the universe or whatever. Even on Earth, you know, even in our timeline, even in the timeline of trees that are still alive now, you know, and it's just like the idea that I was like, the rings inside this tree are rotten deeper down. Like, yeah, if you cut me in half, it just gets worse, man. it's not good now. And then the funny thing is, Chris wrote a fucking song about that same scene in Vertigo for this record.
No kidding. Like, nah, man, this is really cool that you're going this deep in talking about all this, because, you know, I seem to write very linear when I'm writing lyrics. Like, this is what the song's about. And we've went off on some tangents here. This song's about a bunch of different things that influenced you, and it all came together as one song. And it's just very intriguing to me. It's very cool. We're at the 2 minutes and 5 second mark now in the tune. There's like a guitar solo, a guitar lead here for like 8 seconds up to the 2:13 mark. And now we're into verse 3. I got these black rotten teeth cracking off in bloody beef. And I haven't seen the dentist in at least 6,000 weeks. And I'm high on this TV and these whiskeys and these dreams that I wouldn't dare to follow because I couldn't dare succeed. So I write down shitty words. So I sit in titty bars. So I text and tweet and look at nudes and beat off in the dark. Back when I was just a boy, these were okay ways to go. But baby, I got old and somewhere I ditched my soul. Oh. And harmonies, double vocals on Because I Couldn't Dare Succeed. So I text and tweet and look at nudes and beat off in the dark. But baby, I got old.
I made Chris sing that one.
Yeah. Here, sing this one.
Dare to follow, 'cause I couldn't dare succeed. So I write down shitty words, so I sit in titty bars, so I text and tweet and look at nudes and beat off in the dark. back when I was just
a boy. That was the line I thought you were just going to talk about in the song that you thought it'd be funny for me to read.
I mean, it's funny for you to read that too. But.
Yeah, no. And then in Somewhere I Ditched My Soul, there's a double vocal on that. Again, this particular verse, what I do like about it is it's the same musically and the same feel as the other two. The music is almost secondary here to the storytelling that's going on. You know, a lot of times it's the opposite. A lot of times it's the musical thing. It doesn't matter what the lyrics are about. It doesn't matter so much the melody.
Right,
here it's
right.
The complete opposite. This is a story that you're telling. And by this point in it, like, I'm reading it going, I need to talk to you now and find out what the hell is going on here. So set this one up.
Okay, well, the general thing here is that, like, I kind of thought that, you know, it would start with you click on the link for the world's biggest dick, and then it would go into the sad old man with the sad, saggy ass, and you kind of, like, slowly heat up the pot for the lobster, you know what I mean, without people noticing it. It's like it gets a little bit sadder and a little bit more dire, and then this verse... The idea was like, it's going to sound funny, but by now, nothing about this is funny at all. you know what I mean?
Yeah. This was fun for a while.
And it's like, but these are like the technically funniest lyrics. But it's like, after you've listened to the first two verses, you go, I don't think I can laugh at this. It's really depressing. He means it. So I got the black rotten teeth cracking off and bloody beef. That is 100% designed to just make you so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because it's just such a disturbing fucking image.
Bloody beef is your awful gum line. Yeah.
Yeah. And I haven't seen the dentist in at least 6,000 weeks. I kind of regret the choice of 6,000 because I feel like that's like...
It's like 600 years.
Yeah, something like that. But
that means that gum line's looking rough, brother.
I was doing my math pretty fucking fast and loose because I write pretty... The song's got to take 5 minutes, Chris. We already talked about this.
I know.
So that's how it happened. And then... Out high on these TVs and these whiskeys and these dreams that I couldn't dare to follow because I wouldn't dare succeed is like, that's the fucking main line of this song, right? Like that's the line that where I think if I'm listening to it as a, you know, consumer of the song, I'm going, fuck, I gotta go back to college.
Well, something after that line, I'll have you set the rest of this up for us, but I really like, and I found interesting, you know, that next line that comes, it's the guitar chord without the arpeggio. It's just the chord, but it sounds like there's a tremolo on that one.
Back when I was just a boy, we were okay, ways to go, but maybe I got old, somewhere I ditched my soul. Oh,
you know, almost like a whammy bar tremolo thing. Was that, do you remember if that was done on purpose? It's really cool.
No, I don't remember like a super hyper conscious effort to do anything.
Maybe that's just the way Chris played it. It just happened that way.
Well, Chris is also like, you know, like Chris and I are both like very lyrically focused when it comes to like how we play for each other. Like I play my bass to his vocals. You know, he plays his guitar to my vocals and we've been best friends since we were 10. We're both 44, you know? So it's like, there's a certain point where it's like, yeah, no shit. You're doing that. Right.
Yeah,
okay. Boom.
You're finishing each other's sentences. Yeah.
Yeah. Me and Chris used to do that bit all the time. Cause it's like, we're such good friends. We finish each other's sentences. And then he'd go, I don't know if we actually, I'd be like, finish each other's sentences.
No, but you know that connection, though. When you've known someone that long, you're like, oh, you did this? Well, of course you did that. That's what you do.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. Totally.
So what's up with, I write down shitty words. So I sit in titty bars. So I text and tweet and look at nudes and beat off in the dark. Like, is that autobiographical or?
I do all that stuff.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, I mean, no, I absolutely do all that stuff. This is supposed to be the part where I'm the sad old man under the dryer. Like, this is where I'm naked. right?
That's what I took from this. I took that the tides have kind of turned on this verse.
I'll sit here and like walk through this anonymous Gotham and fucking, you know, kind of slowly recognize my humanity in other people that I find to be pathetic. But at the end of the day, it's me who's on the chopping block for myself, you know?
Right.
And it's like, this is what I do. And I think the next line is like really like prescient. I mean, you know, I shouldn't say that because it sounds really self-important, but like when I was just a boy, these were okay ways to go. It's like, you know, when you're a kid, you can just like, yeah, it's fine to like, just like fucking whack off and goof around on the internet or whatever, you know, go to titty bars. I mean, you're 21, fuck it. But now I'm old and I have no soul. So, and I'm still doing it. So,
Well, after this, we come back into the intro again, but this time the bass, you're playing like chords. You're doing like octave things. And then like, also I notice here that I'm assuming it's you, you're whistling the guitar solo. The guitar riff at the top and earlier in the song, the lick, you're whistling. And I noticed when you play the song acoustic that you whistle that part. That's why I was pretty sure it was you doing here.
That's how it was written.
Why the whistle here and not the guitar lick there that time?
It was written as a whistle. And I was just like, this whole song was inspired by the song Whistle by Flo Rida. You just put your lips together. Can you blow my whistle, baby? Here we go.
As if your explanation of this song couldn't get any weirder. Now we're talking about Flo Rida. This is killing me. This is great.
This is why you're famous and I fucking write a blog for a living.
Just because I get recognized at Target twice every year doesn't mean I'm famous.
So this was inspired by that Flo Rida song. And so when I wrote it, that whistle part was what you've referred to as the haunting guitar part every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's a point. I mean, I remember the first time I played this before I even knew if I wanted it to be a Lawrence Armstrong, because it's a little bit weird for a Lawrence Armstrong, but where people were like, when you started playing this and you started whistling, I was like, fuck this. And by the end, I was like, I love that song. So that's really nice. You know, people were.
Isn't it weird how sometimes a hook's so annoying that eventually you love it and you don't know why? That's cool.
So it was just my theory that the heart of the song was the whistle. Like, that's what made me want to write the song, was the whistle from the song Whistle from Flo Rida.
Yeah.
And I feel like if this song is like a delve down into the deepest depths of the psyche of whoever the narrator is, who's probably mostly me, when it gets to the bottom, that's when the whistle should happen. Because you can't even get a guitar.
Well, this is happening, and then there's a band buildup again, and it's that kick drum that's coming in with the cool fills. And then something that happens here just kind of lifts this second chorus. It starts out in the left speaker, there's a pick slide, and then there's a pick slide on the right speaker, and then boom.
Oh, yeah.
In this song, it almost felt like, and I've listened to it probably 30 times in the last day and a half, just over and over again. It's like, why a pick slide in this song? You know, in certain other songs, but it's funny. It doesn't seem like anywhere else in the song it would work, but here it works perfectly. And it sets up for chorus two, which is the same as chorus one. This sweet and sticky dream was nothing that I needed. Just demons to believe, poisons lined up to feed them. And the rings inside this tree are rotten deeper down. God damn this fucking town. It's restless and I'm drowning. And then we go into a part that only happens once in this song. It's an outro. I called it a post-chorus outro here. Seas, And I love this part. I love it because it is a departure, and it almost feels like there should be something after this, but you end the song with this. You don't end it on the chorus. There's no real chorus. I mean, what I'm calling the chorus happens twice, but this is a story, this whole song. There's not one part that's like, you know, if anything, the verses are the main thing because they happen three times. But this part is, we are the lonely seeds, adrift on burning seas. And man, you do something here on seas. You seas, you hold out the E's at the end. And just the way that you sing it, it's just a really cool, you have a really cool inflection there. Just pour the goddamn round and let's let these fuckers down. And,
drown.
Excuse me, let these fuckers drown. That's a pretty depressing way to end the tune. I mean...
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing, is like, that's what I was kind of saying. It's like, even as dark as the song sounds in the beginning, it's like kind of like, oh, this is funny. Oh, it's kind of a joke. Oh, it's funny. Oh, this is not that funny. Oh, this is really not funny. And then like this part is like, sorry.
Yeah. And then right after you say drown, the band ends on this big A chord and you think that's the end of it. And then it's this hit, hit, hit of the band all at once. It's the A chord to the B chord, and it ends on D flat, and it doesn't give you that root note of A again. It ends on D flat. It kind of leaves you kind of hanging on like that suspense chord. At the very end of this track, I noticed that there's like some street noise with almost like a Gregorian chant or something happening behind it. What is that?
Yeah. Well, that is the that is the Lawrence Arms always constantly putting shit between our the entire Metropole record is thematically designed to be like a tour through an anonymous city, and if you listen to the record from the beginning, you will hear street noise throughout the entire thing. Like a lot of it I recorded in Italy, like street musicians playing stuff, and some of it was me and Chris in Vegas walking around. And some of it is stuff that we constructed in the studio in order to, like, you know, complete the sort of like the landscape that we were trying to convey. The Gregorian chant, that's us.
Oh, it is
doing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
The chant is us. The ambient noise is something from Vegas.
Cool.
It sounds so fucking lame to say this, but it's like the whole album is like really supposed to be taken in as one single piece of art, you know? And I am just a dumb punk rock musician. So like what I do art is like pretty pretentious, presumptuous. But
I feel the same way when people refer to me as that. I don't know. I'm just some guy in a band. I can feel where you're coming from with that. But man, we're gonna wrap up here in a second. I just want to say that, like, again, I don't think you give yourself enough credit. This song is really cool. I've learned so much in the last year about songwriting. You know, when I was in my 20s, I thought I knew everything. When I got my 30s, I realized I did know everything. And now I realize I don't know shit. I'm trying to learn more and more and more about my craft. And just the imagery in this one, man. And just referencing the Titanic to the methadone clinic, to the YMCA, to, you know, Flo Rida, everything that you have going on here. For me to wrap my head around it's really cool. So I want to thank you for jumping on with us. And is there anything you'd like to leave the listeners right now? What you got going on with the band, your other projects, solo? What's going on?
I'm doing a solo tour through like sort of like most of the East and the South, actually. I'm fully vaccinated, and if you are too, then come on out, man. I would love to see you, and it's been too long. Just don't make fun of me for looking really like old and tubby. It's been a year and a half I've been sitting in my house, man.
You look great. I always tell my listeners, I see my guests on Zoom. I can see Brennan. He's not giving himself enough credit in the looks department. But where can people find those dates?
You know what? RedScare.net is the easiest place to find them. And man, I can't thank you enough. This has been really fun. And like, I can't believe that, you're fucking a legend and a hero to me, man. And like, you fucking pay attention to my songs. God damn it. Fuck you, man. This is cool.
And back at you, because I told you how I felt about you through the whole thing. I love you. You know that. And I wish you nothing but the best. And I'm going to check out your tour dates. If you're near me, I'm going to come see you.
If you don't, I'm going to come cough in your...
You're gonna send
cough on
you're gonna send
sleep.
The old man with the saggy ass after me.
Yeah, that's right. That's me.
And it's you. All right, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
End of the show. Here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is submit your song via MP3 only and your bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured band is Tabernak, spelled T-A-B-A-R-N-A-K. You can find all their music on the streaming services. Here's a snippet of their song, Hutve Pahit.
The Rap with Chris and Chris.
So while we were recording this one and I was over here taking my notes while you and Brendan had your conversation, I probably laughed the entire time. I've never met the guy before, but he's super cool and personable. And just listening to you guys talk, it made me feel like I was friends with him. And I feel like a lot of people that listen to this episode are going to feel that same way because he's pretty hilarious.
He is too funny. He's always been that way. He's witty. He's incredibly smart. Not just book smart, but I guess street smart, whatever you want to call it. He's just he's got a good head in his shoulders. But man, he, like I said, back in the slapstick days when I first knew him, he's just this wiry punk rock kid. And I mean, he used to piss people off, and that's what initially attracted me to him. But there's been nights hanging out with that guy where I've been laughing so hard my stomach hurts. He's hilarious.
Yeah, I think there's something about artists that don't take themselves too seriously, which really endears me to them. I mean, you know, I think he is sort of self-deprecating and whatever, but you know that he does take the music seriously, even if he can joke about it in a conversation about a song.
I think he does. I also think that, and I'm going to try to delicately say this, you know, not to sound weird, or it's in no way meant condescending, but I think there's some people that just... they're, and he doesn't necessarily like the term, he said it himself, their art is for them, their music is for them. And you know, to take it any further on a commercial level or be any bigger of a band than Lawrence Arms already is, I don't think that was ever what Brennan really wanted. I certainly think that they could have been more popular, like Craig Aronson said, the guy was a star. There's something about him that's just you know, that people gravitate towards him, but he's always kind of seemed like, you know, he's kind of wanted to be off the grid a little bit, which I respect too.
And that's to take nothing away from the fact that they are a popular band within the world of punk rock. It's just, we're talking about mainstream, the radio, among their peers. You're talking about Alkaline Trio and Rise Against, these bands which have achieved mainstream success. That's what you mean. But obviously within the punk rock world, I mean, you know, they're on Epitaph, they do well, people love them. So
thanks for saying that. It was by no means a knock. It was just I don't think that Brendan gives himself enough credit is really what I was getting at, you know. And I tried to say that to him in the episode, but I really, it's funny, when I was going over, I never thought that first line, I thought he was talking about himself, again, being self-deprecating, click on the link for the world's biggest dick, and then when he broke it down to just being, an, you know, it verbatim of what it is, it just, I'm like, okay, here we go.
Yeah. Well, that was one of my notes about this episode, man, is the first line of the song grabs you, and it makes you pay attention, and there's something to that, whether it's, I don't care if it's a book, it's a TV show, the first scene of a movie. When something grabs you like that and makes you pay attention, you're way more likely to pay attention to the rest of the song because you're hooked, you know? And I think that's a good quality in a song.
Absolutely, yeah. And as we got further into the tune, just all the different references of what he was talking about. Like I said, my head doesn't work like that. And it's kind of like a songwriting exercise of where, you know, one of these days I want to go, okay, I want to take five completely different experiences from one another, completely opposite of something that happened to me in London one time and something that happened in California and maybe this quote from a movie I like and try to write a song. It's a really interesting way to approach songwriting.
Within the conversation about this one song, there were references made to Titanic, Banksy, Vertigo, what else?
Flo-Rida,
Flo-Rida.
The YMCA, the Methadone Clinic.
his dental, his teeth, everything you can imagine within one song. Yeah, you don't hear about that very often. Usually, like you said about your own personal songwriting, things are a little more linear.
Yeah, you know, you come up with an idea for a song, you write about that experience. And I know not everybody writes like that. There's different things. But this song was really, and I don't say this in a bad light, it was just really all over the place with all the different references. It's just it's just crazy. I also, there's sometimes I'll write things in my notes or I'll think something to say, and I go, I don't know if I want to say that. And I felt that I could, knowing Brennan so long. And he's like, wow. And he completely agreed. Agreed when I said that, you know, his voice has kind of like this southern drawl, like the thing to it. And I said, this song just reminds me of like a bar scene in a spaghetti western. And he laughed and he got it because, I don't know. It's just got that thing. And the music in this one, not that the parts aren't cool and the musicianship isn't cool. All the parts are, the pieces are there musically, but, really this is all about the story and the imagery.
For sure. And it's interesting how, within lyrics, you can see how a person's brain works. You can get into their psyche. And I feel like this song's a real window into Brendan Kelly's brain.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's always been that way. Like I said, he's always been, he's incredibly witty. I've always kind of prided myself on being quick witted and in the moment and funny, but, he outwits me. The guy's quick. And, He's got that that it factor, something about Brennan. He's always had it. And something else I mentioned, Chris, is just I can't take away how important that Chicago scene is. How many bands, how much talent has come out of that? And I talked about it in the Dan Andreano episode. And again, I brought it up here. Just the amount of talent that came out of Slapstick, that band, those kids, and I'm calling them kids, referencing that time period, they don't know how good they were, man. That band was on fire.
It's crazy how many people from the same clique of friends now we've had on here. We've had two members of Alkaline Trio. We've had Tim from Rise Against. We've had Brendan. There might even be more. But yeah, that it's crazy that all those guys not only are from the same city, but they're also within the same clique of friends. And like you brought up earlier in the episode, it's like a wealth of talent within that small little clique of people.
Yeah, and sometimes the best friends, and there's something that's always been down to earth about the Chicago punk scene that I like, and I said it earlier, what I love about someone like Brennan, I may not have talked to him in a year or two or three or seen him in person, and the minute we see each other or do talk, we pick right back up where we left off. It's awesome.
Yeah, you can tell that you guys are old buddies when you listen to this episode.
And speaking of buddies, I want to thank all our buddies here at Krista Makes a Podcast, each and every one of you that listens each week and that gives to each month's fundraiser. This month's fundraiser for July is Star Ovarian Cancer Foundation, and you can head over to KristaMakesADifference.com to find out all the info about that and how you can donate. Whatever you can give, we'd really appreciate it. It goes to a wonderful organization.
It's called ChrisDemakesADifference.com, but actually it is ChrisDemakesApodcastListenersMakeADifference.com. That domain name was just way too long to remember, though. When we say ChrisDemakesADifference.com, we mean everyone listening who chips in. And even a dollar goes a long way. You know, we could have billions of dollars for each month's fundraiser if everyone who listens, all our billions of listeners listen. We could raise $1 billion for each month's fundraiser.
We certainly could. And if we can't, we're going to die trying. I'll tell you that much, Chris.
Hell yeah.
But I am still writing these crazy, wacky custom songs for people. And Chris is going to play you a little snippet right now to show you what I do.
I can write you a ska song or maybe.
Actually, you don't want to hear me rap. Pick any other style, trust me.
I could even write a ballad for your anniversary or your birthday.
Looking for a voiceover, jingle, or music for your business, podcast, or TV show? Well, look no further. I'm your guy.
That's right. If you'd like your very own custom song, kind of like any of the styles you just heard with that wacky track, you can hit me up at chrisdemakes@gmail.com. I'd love to write you or that special someone a very own custom song of your own. Give me a follow on Instagram at @LessThanChrisD. I'd appreciate it. And don't forget our supporting cast VIP program. You can find that at chrisdemakes.com. And yeah, you can find all kinds of goodies over there. We do the after party episodes, Chris and I, as well as we have a merchandise store with a killer pullover and a great t-shirt that are very comfortable, I can attest.
I love that you keep calling it a pullover, even though it's a zip up.
Did I say pullover again?
Yeah, you did say pullover. You
it's
love
a zip
pullover.
Up. I hate pullovers. I don't even wear those dang things.
Yeah, it's annoying pulling that up over your head. Yeah, yeah, it's zip up. It's zip up. You know, so you could you can do that halfway where you just have it zipped open, so you're you're warm, but you're still letting a little air in. You know,
I'm gonna make you a promise, our listeners. We will never have a pullover. They will all be zip ups. I will never say pullover again.
Okay. All right. Yeah. 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 For sure. Yeah. But if you supporting cast, ChrisDemakes.com, you know the deal. It helps us out a lot, and you get extra episodes, and you know, helps us continue making this podcast that you've grown to love.
That's right. And want to thank this week's guest, Mr. Brendan Kelly, a dear old crazy friend of mine from the Lawrence Arms, for sitting in with us. And we'll see you next week.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs. But what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.